This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
You may know James Hansen as a leading climate scientist from NASA, the man who warned Congress about global warming in 1988.
Altogether, this evidence represents a very strong case, in my opinion, that the greenhouse effect has been detected and it is changing our climate now.
Hansen is out with a new bombshell paper called Global Warming in the Pipeline. It is not yet peer-reviewed, but it's out there on the net for comment. The paper is huge. Hansen says we have already reached a doubling point of greenhouse gas emissions when we count the other global warming gases like methane, nitrous oxide, and a bunch of halogens. The authors also claim mainstream science has underestimated the power of what will happen now that the Earth is so far out of energy balance. This is disputed by other scientists. Finally, Hansen says, as he has for a decade, that when you add this up, sea level rise will be much higher than we have been told. And that does fit in with our first guest on disappearing glaciers this show. But Hansen and his colleagues think we could get several meters of sea level rise, say 12 feet or more, by the year 2100. That is apocalyptic for most of the world's great cities and agricultural deltas. The Warming in the Pipeline paper is too big for one program. We're going to start with just one of the most concrete and provable instances of hidden warming that is being revealed by a change in the atmosphere. This is the story of how clouds of pollution that cooled the sea and the land are disappearing, letting in the full power of the sun. Our pollution actually helps cool the planet. New science warns, as governments clear the air, as they must to save our health, Earth will experience more warming faster than ever. The paper is called Global Warming in the Pipeline. It comes from a team led by former NASA scientist James Hansen. The paper is still up for peer review, but evidence has been building for years. Among the authors, we can find Leon Simons. Leon is not officially a climate scientist, and yet James Hansen credits Leon's contribution to this paper. Simons nailed a crucial change in ship emissions and cloud formation. Leon is an independent climate policy analyst and a Netherlands board member of the Club of Rome. From the Netherlands, Leon Simons, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi, thank you.
Almost everything we buy these days arrives by container ship. The ocean is really busy with transport. How could global shipping modify global heating?
Yeah, so there's two things to consider. Of course, there's the greenhouse gas emissions of global shipping. Many people will know about that. When the ships burn fuel, that's oil from refineries, which is more or less the end product, so the good stuff, let's say, goes to cars and to airplanes. And what's left is the more sticky stuff, which needs to be heated to be able to be burned in these chambers. It's more like in between oil and coal, let's say, so it's very thick. And that contains, of course, carbohydrates, and carbohydrates contain the energy. And if these carbohydrates are burned, that releases CO2. So that's what most people will know about energy use, is the CO2 emissions associated with that energy use. But these fuels which are taken from the ground also contain sulfur. Most people know that if a volcano erupts, that a lot of sulfur is emitted into the atmosphere. If you are near a volcano, you will smell the sulfur. Fossil fuels taken from the ground contain sulfur, and the oil that is burned by ships had, until recently, a very high sulfur content. That was 3.5%. And sulfur, when it's burned, it will go into the atmosphere and it will become very small particles. And these very small particles, they are very light, bright, and they will reflect sunlight. But these particles also act as what is called condensation nuclei, which means that water droplets in the atmosphere, water vapor, will condensate against this particle of sulfur, which makes it create clouds. But because these particles are very small, the sulfur particles are very small, very large and bright clouds will be formed. And when this is done over the oceans, the dark ocean will be covered by a large layer of clouds, which reflects sunlight. and with a lot of emissions over the oceans by about 50,000 ships over the past decades, that resulted in a cooling over the oceans. And with the reduction of sulfur fuel content as litigated by the International Maritime Organization, the concentration of sulfur in the fuel reduced from 3.5% to 0.5%, and that results in a very significant reduction, of course, in emissions over the oceans, which is then resulting in a reduction of cloud formation, which reduces sunlight that is reflected back to space, and then accordingly there will be more heat absorbed by the ocean.
The new sulfate emissions from the IMO really went global in 2020. The ships either have to get a cleaner fuel or put scrubbers on their stacks. Is there any way to track whether the rules are working? Has there been an impact already?
What to consider here is that, of course, first the rules have to be enforced. We've seen it in 2015, for example, where there were regional sulfur regulations near the coast of North America and Europe. And there we saw that there was a very strict regulation, and also the ships, they did change their fuels or they did change to scrubbers. And we see the same happening now starting on January 1st, 2020, where leading up to that, ships were already installing these scrubbers or were already buying the low sulfur fuels. Accordingly, we expect, of course, to see changes in how much heat is reflected back to space, how much sunlight is reflected back to space. And now from data from NASA, we can see that there's less sunlight reflected back to space, especially over regions of heavy shipping, which is, for example, between North America and Europe and North America and China. We see a very clear signal that there is less sunlight being reflected back to space, which is in line with the limited modeling studies that have been done, which predicted that especially in these regions there will be additional warming from reduction of sulfur emissions from shipping.
But the cooling of pollution is not just coming from ships. A priority for the Chinese government is cleaning up deadly air pollution in most cities, a lot of that coming from coal burning, which also has sulfur in it, as we know. The United States already curbed sulfur emissions in diesel fuel. Did you establish the role of ship pollution relative to other sources of human-made aerosols?
Yes, there is indeed emission reductions from sulfur from in the United States, from cars, and but also especially with the reduction in coal use. When fracking started in the past decades, there was a significant switch to the burning of gas instead of coal, which reduced emissions of sulfur from the United States in about 12 years with 70%, and it was the same happened in China, as you mentioned, where a lot of coal plants either installed these scrubbers where they take sulfur from the emissions, or they close the dirty plants and build new ones which have these scrubbers. So indeed, there's a lot of policy happening globally which is reducing sulfur emissions. But we do see, especially in the regions where the ships sail, we see that especially there is a very significant increase in absorbed solar radiation. And this is a relatively pristine environment because there's, of course, there are no other industries and there's potentially some wind bringing pollution from other regions. But the atmospheric lifetime of these particles is about 10 days. Therefore, you expect the most effect over the oceans and the changes over the oceans coming from ships. Of course, we have still only about 2 years of data, starting in January 1st, 2020, when the most significant change in litigation was coming into effect. It's possible that it's variability or it's a different source, but the signal is really very strong. It's about 3.5 watts per square meter of increased solar radiation happening over the North Pacific, the North Atlantic, and the United States, this area combined, and that's a significant part of the globe. And especially by looking at such a large area, that helps to reduce the uncertainty of variability.
That's an immense amount of incoming energy that is now reaching the surface. Suppose reduction in the sulfate emissions on land and sea end. what the paper calls the great inadvertent aerosol experiment, how much previously hidden warming will emerge and how fast?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And yeah, of course, the honest answer is we don't know. We don't know for sure. And that's, of course, many things can happen. If there's tomorrow a very significant volcano emitting a lot of sulfur into the higher atmosphere, into the stratosphere, that could cause cooling. So that could compensate for the warming. And we have never seen such a, if this is indeed causing, a, for example, a global warming of, let's say, it's called forcing. So if this change causes a forcing increase of the high estimate, which is about 0.5 watts per square meter, that will be equal to 10 years of global greenhouse gas emissions. We've never seen such a significant spike at once of forcing change, especially because it's a very regional change. So the regional changes might be even more significant. And we already see very significant warming now happening in the areas where these shipping emissions have been reduced, which is the Northern Hemisphere mid-latitudes. For example, here in Europe, we just had record-breaking temperatures. Some winter temperature records were broken by 5 degrees Celsius, which is almost, let me think, 8 degrees Fahrenheit, I think. That's very significant, and we've seen more of these significant record temperature changes in the northern mid-latitude in the past 2 years. And this should really be taken into account when doing the assessments of what causes the warming we see in the past 2 years and most likely also happening in the coming years. Because this is something that very little research is done on still, unfortunately. Well, it could be a very significant change. It could cause a very significant change to regional climates.
Well, Leon Simons, do you think world leaders are aware cleaning up air pollution could add dangerous heat to the planet?
The ones I've spoken to are not aware of it at all. For example, the IPCC, which is, of course, the advisory body on climate change too, policymakers rarely communicate it, and if they communicate it, it's often in the fine print, and therefore I think, or that doesn't help to inform both policymakers or media, and media of course have a role to play in translating the complex science from the IPCC and other climate research to policymakers and to the broader public. So there's still a lot to be done to better inform both the media and the public and, of course, policymakers about this subject, especially because it could have significant short-term effects. If you talk about climate change and regional impacts and risks, aerosols changes are likely more important than greenhouse gas changes on the short term.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith from the Netherlands. Our guest is independent climate researcher Leon Simons. He has just co-authored a new paper with James Hansen and other leading scientists. Leon, how does an independent researcher end up as a co-author on Breaking Science with some of the best-known climate scientists on the planet? How did that happen?
I've been doing climate research for a while, and I've met James Hansen a few times in my life. I think first about 12 years ago when there was a court case against the Dutch government from a Dutch NGO, where James Hansen was present in the run-up to that to discuss the science behind the court case and behind the case for the NGO. And I was there to assist the NGO and to assist James Hansen during the week he was here. So, and I've been reading about climate science. I've been working on energy systems for the past 12 years through my work as an entrepreneur introducing energy systems in developing countries. So this helped me to understand how different energy systems change. And of course, the planet is a very large energy system in a way. And when I read about the changes happening to global shipping emissions, I remembered the effect of aerosols, of which sulfur is the most important one, on the global climate. And I realized that changing the sulfur emissions over the oceans could have a very significant effect, and I found that there was very little research yet available on the subject. Therefore, I contacted J- James Hansen on this. And we discussed it, and first he was a bit skeptical about it because, of course, it's this such a significant change of 80% reduction over the oceans of one of the most important climate forces. It's something to be skeptical about if that could really happen, but that's what proved to happen because of these, the availability of cleaner fuels and the availability of the scrubbers which are there to take this sulfur from the emissions. And then, yeah, he asked me to work with him on a paper to highlight these findings. And, yeah, that's what we've been working on in the past 2 years.
And isn't it ironic that conspiracy theorists looked for chemtrails out of planes as hidden geoengineering? Meanwhile, we were cooling the planet, but not on purpose, and we were doing geoengineering right out in the open.
You say right out of the open, but I think in a way the oceans are not, for many people, for most people, the oceans are not right out of the open. And that's maybe the reason why they have been forgotten in a way, both by the public and by many climate scientists. While the oceans do absorb 90% of global warming, 90% of the heating, the additional heat entering the Earth system is absorbed by the oceans. And the oceans have 70% or 71% of the global surface. But still, 100% of the people live on the land surface, of course. So most people are not aware of what's happening with the oceans. And that's, I think, also one of the reasons why many climate scientists have not been aware of the initial cooling effect of ships over the oceans, which is still very uncertain, and the emission reductions and the potential warming effect of these reductions.
And one of the biggest concerns about geoengineering, like injection of sulfates into the upper atmosphere to cool the planet, is what if it stops for any reason, from economic breakdown to war or political change? Now, some people hear the term termination shock and they think of mass extinction. You led a 2021 paper about termination shock. What do you mean by that term?
Termination shock is a term that's often used when talking about geoengineering, where the climate is cooled down by especially putting sulfur into the stratosphere, and then that causes cooling. But if you stop, then the stopping that could result in rapid warming. But termination shock is also the effect of terminating other emissions. If you terminate the emissions of shipping, if you stop emitting particles over the oceans which cool the oceans, then that could have a rapid warming effect. And the shock describes the rapid warming. The rapid warming is described as a minimum of about 0.2 degrees Celsius of warming in 10 years.
That is distributed globally, so it could be a lot more than that when it arrives on land, for example, in a heat wave or something like that.
Yeah, so this 0.2 degrees Celsius of warming in 10 years, that's a minimum to describe it as a termination shock. And we don't know if there will be a termination shock. That depends on the effect which it will have on the climate, which, again, are still uncertain, but the first signs is that the effect might be stronger than most even climate scientists thought. The effect could be about 0.2 degrees Celsius or higher when it turns out to be a termination shock. And indeed, the regional effect will be stronger. So there will be more warming in areas where these emissions have been reduced, because that's also the areas where initially there was cooling. For example, in Europe, in the 1980s, there was a very high amount of sulfur emissions from coal burning. And then for health reasons and to reduce acid rain, there were scrubbers installed at these coal-fired power plants. And then in the past decades, we've seen a very rapid increase in warming. And Europe warmed by about 2 degrees Celsius over the past 40 years. So since 1980 or 1990, Europe warmed by about 2 degrees Celsius, and that increase in the rate of warming was caused by reduced sulfur emissions, which caused less clouds and more sunshine and more warming.
Yes, there's a novel called Termination Shock, and it suggests we would have to cut 20 times more carbon to offset the change in sulfur emissions. What do you think?
In my view, if this reduction in sulfur emissions over the oceans really causes a warming equal to 10 years of greenhouse gas emissions, if you want to reduce that effect by reducing greenhouse gas emissions, you would have to stop emitting any greenhouse gases for 10 years.
Now, as we speak, it turns out Europe is warmer than expected. You mentioned that, and that's a welcome development during the gas shortage scare. But I think the public associates global warming more with hotter summer heat waves. Is it true the biggest warming, at least in these early stages, will be in winter?
I'm not sure. I think that depends a bit on the region. We do see that certain, I think the wind in the winter, there's more, up to now, more warming, especially over the northern hemisphere. There are different things at play there. Of course, the southern hemisphere receives more radiation in the winter, which is even more than, because the Earth is now, on the 4th of January, the Earth is closest to the sun. It will be all year, and that's when the southern hemisphere is faced towards the sun, and that causes the Earth to receive more heat in winter, which also causes, of course, more heat to be absorbed by the southern hemisphere, which causes more an imbalance between the different hemispheres. And when we reduce emissions, especially in the northern hemisphere, these things might impact the distribution of heat between different hemispheres. So there's many things at play, which are very uncertain still, because, as I mentioned, this is an experiment which has never been done before. So we don't know exactly what will happen. But understanding of these complex systems is crucial, and how these large regions, which are about 50 million square kilometers, what happens if we increase the amount of energy being absorbed there with 4 watts per square meter. Yeah, that's still uncertain, but it could be very significant. And I think some of the very strong heat waves we've been already seeing are a worrying sign for that. And this can happen in winter, but it can also happen in summer.
We can't get into specifics about the new warming in the pipeline paper until it is published, but I think this may be the most important science I've seen in the last year or two. Generally, what does the public need to know, Leon?
I think the public needs to be aware of the effect the reduction in especially sulfur emissions can have on the regional climate, because they need to be able to prepare for the rapid changes they are being faced with. If it results in temperatures which we have never seen ever in our lifetimes, we should know about that, and we should be able to prepare for that, because otherwise we can be faced with the consequences with even more severely than if we were preparing. So I think that's really crucial. We're now heading for the iceberg in a way blind. Well, we have the binoculars, we have the information is there, we have the knowledge that there is an iceberg approaching, but we should be preparing, we should be getting the lifeboats ready, so to say.
From the Netherlands, we've been speaking with Leon Simons, co-author of the blockbuster new paper Global Warming in the Pipeline. You can find links to his work and the MIR presentation by Leon all in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Leon, thank you for helping us out on Radio EcoShock.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
I'm Alex Smith reporting.
Covering the world, this is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Leon Simons is the independent climate analyst based in the Netherlands. He is co-author of the new paper Global Warming in the Pipeline. James Hansen credits Leon Simons for the work on ship pollution and climate change. We will cover more of this paper in coming shows. Leon Simons says clouds forming from ship emissions were hugely reduced almost as soon as new regulations drastically cut sulfur. That lets in more sunlight to hit the ocean and warming the seas. Now, with all the satellite eyes in the sky, this should be easy to check. So I did. In a press release dated October 28, 2022, NASA did indeed find, quote, a global standard limiting sulfur in ship fuel reduced artificial ship track clouds to record lows in 2020. Drawing on nearly two decades of satellite imagery, researchers found that the number of ship tracks fell significantly after a new fuel regulation went into effect, a global standard implemented in 2020 by the International Maritime Organization, the IMO, required an 86% reduction in fuel sulfur content, likely reduced ship track formation. COVID-19-related trade disruptions also played a small role in the reduction. That's an end quote from NASA in the fall of 2022, and it pretty well backs up what Leon Simons has told us. The hard data is in a paper published July 2022 in the journal Science. The title is Global Reduction in Ship Tracks from Sulfur Regulations for Shipping Fuel. Now we get into a weird bend in all this science, as geoengineering may have diminishing returns. So, the paper that we just quoted also said, the global 2020 fuel standard is likely a watershed moment that will permanently reduce the population of detectable ship tracks. They go on, such studies will also help assess the effectiveness and impact of deliberate marine cloud brightening as a geoengineering option, end quote. But there lies a problem for artificial solutions like cloud seeding. A paper published October 3, 2022, was led by Duncan Watson Paris, and it was in PNAS. And it says, while locally the relative sensitivity of ship track formation to emission changes can be seen as large as 1.0, there is a large spatial variability, and the global change in the number of tracks is clearly sublinear. An 80% reduction in SO2 emissions causes only a 25% reduction in number of tracks detected. Since the change in droplet number is known to respond logarithmically with increased condensation nuclei, this demonstrates how far from their pre-industrial conditions the shipping corridors are, even after such a large reduction in emissions. It also highlights the difficulty faced by proposed marine cloud brightening efforts due to the diminishing returns on injected aerosol, end quote. Now, I know that was complicated, but I'm sure you got the basic ideas there. This is a new objection to marine cloud brightening to save us from our own emissions hell. It sounds like we would have to pump more and more particles into the stratosphere just to keep the same effect. Or maybe it weakens until it doesn't work. Nobody knows. But like most things in science, some object to the cooling claimed by Leon Simons. A study led by Franziska Glasmeier in Science 2021 found, quote, studies of stratocumulus cloud tracks that are formed by ship exhaust have been used to estimate the radiative impact of this process. But Glasmeier et al. Now show that this approach overestimates the cooling effect of aerosol addition by up to 200%, end quote. So it's all a study that is still very much in action, as Leon told us. Ship track clouds have been looked at since the first satellites were launched in the early 1980s, but the operations of clouds are still, well, cloudy. We learn new things about them all the time. A study published last October in Nature found, quote, only a small fraction of the clouds polluted by shipping shows ship tracks, end quote. So there's a lot of pollution from ships that doesn't form those wispy clouds and cannot be seen by satellites. And even the unseen particles from ships can cause cooling. Our guest Leon Simons knows all this and warned us there's still a lot of uncertainty about how clouds work and how much cooling they may give us in the future. Remember our 2019 interview with NASA's Tapio Schneider? They found a ceiling of greenhouse gases, possibly starting around 1,200 parts per million, where the massive low clouds famous in the tropics could no longer form. That would be a big loss of cloud cooling, another wave of imminent warming on this planet. But we're only about halfway to that 1,200 parts per million deadline. Who knew we were cloud makers? Why did the chemtrails people point to clouds from aircraft emissions when ships and coal-burning power plants were really the ones cooling the planet? Their emissions do poison us, while millions are dying prematurely every year from air pollution. And we talked about geoengineering as a future thing while this civilization has been doing it for decades. Right now, as Leon Simons told us, we are finding out what happens when you rapidly remove polluting but cooling particles from the Earth's atmosphere. We are getting a small dose of termination shock. Enjoy your warmer winters, but know they come with a price tag bigger than we can afford. Next week, we will tackle Hansen's big new paper. If James Hansen shows up, he can explain it for you. If not, well, I'll have to do my best to pass on the science and the news about global warming in the pipeline. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for listening to Radio EcoShock this week and caring about our world.
Love will live in troubled times. Hearts can give when storms come. A human wave can come together. Minds arise as surely as the seas. Divine forms in the minds of many. We believe in the heat. Days flow by to our times of trials. Minds in motion with the beat.